Hi, everybody. It's Marietta Tyler. I'm coming to you from San Diego. So if the quality of this recording is not perfect, I apologize. I'm in a hotel room. Scott Lease is with me. He's a trooper for doing this interview with me in this less than stellar condition. Scott is the SVP of a company called Qualia in the real estate side of the house. But he's got extremely vast amount of knowledge in building and scaling companies. And that's why I really want him to talk about his experiences, the good, the bad of building companies and what he continually learns. So I'm going to pass the baton to him. Scott, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Mary Lou. I'm excited to be here.
So tell us, start at the beginning. You know, when we were talking offline, you've done a lot of different things. You're continually doing a lot of different things, from advising to actually building to implementing. How did you get started? And tell us your story of the path that you've been taking.
Well, I got started in sales a little less than 15 years ago or so now. I never really had a job, to be honest with you, that didn't involve playing or coaching sports until I was 27 years old. I studied psychology and religion as an undergrad. I played two sports in college, soccer and tennis, for 4 years. I played some professional soccer. I went to grad school at Arizona State and got a master's degree in learning theory. And then I got super sick and proceeded to spend the better part of the next 4 years in and out of various hospitals fighting for my life. I had all sorts of nasty problems. I've had 9 total surgeries, 2 life-saving surgeries. So needless to say, I've been through the ringer. That whole process got me hooked on opioids, pain medicine, and I had to kick off that. So there I was at 27 years old, trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And the only thing that I could think of as a competitor that I was sales that would allow me to make up for lost time and kind of get rewarded by how hard I worked and how well that I did. And that's how I got into sales. And I picked a startup because I thought that I candidly could move up faster and kind of learn more in a shorter amount of time. And I've been building and scaling sales organizations ever since, all around the country. That's how I got into sales.
Wow, that's quite a background. And to pick a profession like sales that is typically filled with a lot of rejection, we're not necessarily thought of as professional beings, or more, you know, depending on what field you're in, it could go from this, you know, used car salesman type of profile all the way up to this knowledge engine, which it sounds like from where you came from, you're now into that knowledge engine side of things, which is great. So you got through a painful experience. You started working in organizations, helping them build their revenue streams. What lessons did you learn along the way that you can share with the audience as you transitioned from an individual who is not as healthy as the rest of us, maybe, and also struggling with personal demons, and then working through that to put that aside and start building and teaching others how to do so?
Oh, there's so many lessons to cover. But, you know, one of the things that I think got really good at was finding a process that worked and sticking mm-hmm. to it, and not, you know, tinkering around constantly and changing things. I know everybody nowadays loves to test and test and test before they actually do anything. And I was sort of a jump out the airplane and assemble parachute on the way down kind of a guy. And, you know, I made a few mistakes, you know, along the way, but nothing too dramatic. And it allowed me to very quickly find a process that worked to sell a product, to hire and grow and scale organizations, and to build a sales ops engine and all this kind of thing. So just getting started, finding something that works, and then sticking to it. And just rinse, wash, repeat, rather than tinkering around all over the place.
That's a great advice. Let's stop there for a second. I want to make sure the audience understands this, because process is getting a bad name as well these days about what you just said. You know, we do something, run a couple records through it, move on to the next one. When you were working through defining your process, what worked for you, what was the statistical relevance or the relevance that caused you to say, okay, this is one now that I'm going to mold into something better, and I'm going to continually pour records into it or pour process into it so that it can become a rinse and repeat? What was that? What did that look like to you?
Well, for me, it was actually just personal experience. You know, as somebody that was dealing with health struggles, I realized that, you know, I had to admit that I had a problem. I had to understand why it was important to solve that problem and why it was important to do so quickly. And then and only then was I interested in hearing about a solution. And I just applied my own life experience and experience I had dealing with other people with addiction issues. And I applied that to sales. And I realized that it was the wrong move to just pick up the phone or approach somebody and say, "Hi, Mary Lou, this is Scott. You know, I'm with a company called Qualia. This is what we do." And just start talking about their solution. And it was the wrong move to call somebody up and say, "Hey, you have this particular problem." That doesn't work. What works is me having a conversation with you, asking a lot of questions and listening and getting you to tell me what your problem is, getting you to admit your pain to me. And then I spend time educating somebody on why solving that particular problem might be important. Then I try to create a story around why it's important to solve that problem quickly. And then and only then is somebody interested in hearing about the solution. So, you know, through my own trial and error as I began my early career selling and through my personal experience, I sort of slowly over the years created this model for selling that I call the addiction model. It's find pain, build value, create urgency, then discuss solution. And I don't deviate from that process. And I've been teaching that process and using it in my own organizations ever since.
That's perfect. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. Because I think a lot of people think they're in a process. But as you said, it's the ingredients and how they're ordered within the process that really make a process fail or make a process shine. So I wanted to make sure you clarified that. And I appreciate you doing that. What was next? You started to talk about the next thing.
Well, the next thing is I've got really good at delegating. I understand certain things that I'm good at and certain things that I'm not good at. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I'm not that great at is the whole operation, sales operation side. I don't enjoy spending my time buried in Salesforce and building out reports and workflows and all this kind of stuff and working with sales enablement tools. I know I need all these things, but I don't want to be the one hands-on building them all. So whenever I go into a sales organization, my very first hire that I try to lobby for is somebody to help me with sales ops. And so I invest very heavily in sales operations right from the beginning with scale already in mind. And I can't tell you how many people I talk to who have fairly large sales organizations who've spent almost no time doing this, and their head of sales is the one trying to not only recruit and coach and manage the personalities of the team, but they're also heads down in Salesforce building reports out. So that's one piece of advice that I would give, you know, any sales leader is get really good at delegating, figure out what pieces of the puzzle are maybe not your strong suits, and find somebody and align yourself with somebody who's really good at those things to complement you accordingly.
That's great advice as well. I know that I agree with you that we sometimes put the reporting and dashboarding pieces in as an afterthought. Whereas if we're trying to really improve on that process we just talked about and streamlining it and making it more effective, we need some type of data to tell us the direction or at least point the direction of where things are plugged up, what's running smoothly, where we can improve our communication canvas, whatever it may be. If we get someone in that can help us track those meaningful conversations. So that's great. We've got the process. We've got delegation of certain elements of the job function itself to people who are going to excel at that so that you can excel at the things that you do. What else have you discovered?
Well, you know, one thing that doesn't get talked about enough is, you know, the pressure and stress that comes along with the role and the mental health of somebody in a in a sales leadership role. You know, I don't know that anybody will really understand it other than somebody else who's building and doing the exact same thing. It can be very, you know, isolating, very lonely. So I think it's really important to find, you know, another practitioner in the field to talk to, who's going through it right now, who's been through it before. So, you know, you just have somebody to unload on and share these things with, you know. It's different, I think, talking to somebody who's maybe a full-time, you know, sales consultant or who's been out of the field for a long time. I think it's really important for people to find somebody that is in the trenches still, building and selling and doing all these things, so you can vent to, you know. That's something that I don't think gets talked about enough is people in roles like mine. You got to find time to take care of yourself, because you're spending so much time and energy worrying about everybody underneath you, everybody alongside you, trying to, you know, make their jobs easier. You forget about yourself sometime, and you know, it's really hard to take a break in sales. You know, you take a vacation, you lose pipeline. Mm-hmm. Right? So, like, you've got to find ways to, you know, release some of the stuff before it eats you up.
Release and unplug.
There you go.
So tell us about this event you have coming up. Speaking of releasing and unplugging, I really was interested when you started talking about an event that's coming up in Costa Rica.
Yeah, I went to Costa Rica with a friend of mine and his family and my family over Thanksgiving last year. And my friend Richard Harris is a sales trainer and, you know, goes to all these conferences all the time and meets clients all over the place. And I sort of made a remark about how, you know, to me, going to another conference at the Marriott in, you know, Omaha, Nebraska, it's like, it doesn't do it for me. You know, there's 1,000 people running around Dreamforce or more in San Francisco, and you make all these superficial connections, and, you know, that's just not my thing. And so I was, later that day, I was surfing in Costa Rica, and I was just looking around, and I thought, how come nobody builds a, you know, a conference here? And why does it have to be hundreds, if not thousands of people? Why can't it be like, you know, a dozen or two dozen people who are passionate about sales, about leadership, about management, about career growth, anything you can think of, entrepreneurship? Why don't I just try to get this like little mastermind group together and, you know, combine it with a vacation? So it's like half work, half play. And so I thought about it, and I kind of floated the idea across my network on LinkedIn, and a response. And then I sort of said, heck with it, I'm going to go for it. And so I booked 3 houses right on the water. I, you know, hired caterers, I hired transportation, I hired surf instructors to come every day. We've got a yoga instructor coming. So we're going to spend the mornings, you know, playing, the middle part of the day, you know, giving talks about, you know, sales leadership, scaling advice, social selling, all these different kind of things. And then the afternoon we'll play again and go surfing and do all this fun stuff. So it's the first time I've ever tried anything like this, and it's May 20th to 24th. So I leave in just a couple weeks, actually. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. What a great way to learn and be with your peers. And like you said, you can, these more intimate type of gatherings allow you to open up a little bit more, talk about your challenges, perhaps help and mentor someone else who's there. It's a great way to share your expertise, but also come home learning about what others are going through, so you don't feel so alone. That's great. Yeah. Sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of
That's
fun.
Wonderful.
If it goes well, and I hope it does. I'm thinking about turning it into an annual thing. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, keep us posted on that for sure. So let's get back to the building of, you said you're an advisor now to a lot of startup companies. What are you seeing are the top still, you know, challenges or mistakes, some fatal, some not, that these smaller companies, startups are going through that you wish, like, gosh, if I could wave a magic wand over these companies, these people running these companies, what are the 3 or 5 things that they're all doing incorrectly that you're trying to correct?
Well, the first one I already sort of talked about it, and that involves how they're trying to sell it. at least 75-80% of the companies I go into, you know, in my opinion, they're selling things the wrong way. Their approach is off. You know, they're focused on their solution and, you know, very heavily feature dumping and that kind of thing. So I work with them to try to, you know, reshape how they're thinking about the sale. Secondly, I think startups today still really, really struggle with recruiting, in particular being networked well enough to find people to be their VP or head of sales. So one of the ways that I've kind of positioned myself is I'm really well connected on LinkedIn in particular with other sales leaders all across the country. You know, these are VPs of sales, sales managers, sales operations people, sales recruiters, account executives. And so one of the ways that I'm able to add value is I connect people. You know, so if I advise for some company in Iowa where you're from, odds are I know somebody out there who might be looking to explore new opportunities. And a lot of the entrepreneurs, you know, maybe they come from an engineering background or a finance background or product background, and they really don't know anything about sales, let alone how to scale a sales organization. So they're not really selling it the right way, and they don't know where to begin in terms of recruiting. Those are the two consistent flaws that I see with the early stage companies that I work with in particular.
I'm curious about that. What are your thoughts on the concept of putting together like this dream team of people who, you know, can come in, they can get things started, start building momentum, start building velocity, and then they pass the baton over to more of an operations type of leader, which there seems to be more of those floating around than there are the visionary, conceptual, getting markets started type of people. Have you ever seen that model working where you bring in an interim team to get the ball rolling and then they segue to a team after they've reached a certain revenue milestone?
I have not. That doesn't mean it doesn't work. The first thing that comes to my mind is this old Jeremy Piven movie called The Goods, where he's this fancy car salesman and he has a team of other car salesmen that goes and sort of rejuvenates dying car lots. That's what I'm thinking of as you describe that. I'm sure that model, you know, can work. I haven't seen it. And, you know, I would have a problem with that just sort of philosophically. You know, I kind of consider myself a teacher and a coach and, you know, trying to be a mentor and whatnot. And I would feel strange, you know, helping some organization grow over a few weeks or a few months or whatever, and then just leaving and letting them deal with, you know, everything else. I would much rather
the aftermath.
The aftermath. I'd much rather help somebody, you know, get their leader in place than help that leader for a while, and then, you know, I can hand the baton off when everything is, you know, well under control. That's just me. That's just kind of how I think about stuff.
The reason why I'm curious about that is because I think that method is similar to what startups want to do when they want to outsource their lead generation. I think it's crazy that they outsource from the get-go that piece of the funnel. It talks about, it's all the points you just mentioned. It's really understanding your unique value proposition. And you're basically saying, I'm going to outsource this to others to do that for me. I think that's just as ludicrous.
I couldn't agree more. I've never done that. I never will do that.
But it's a common thing.
I think startups a lot. I think it comes from founders and people inside the company who don't know anything about sales, and they're afraid to, or don't know how to hire a sales team or a sales leader. And so they just try to offload it and they think, oh, here's this company in, you know, the Philippines or someplace. They can do all this sort of lead gen or SDR kind of work for us. And maybe they can even sell.
Right.
I don't buy it either. I'm on your side with that.
Yeah. I mean, but I gave you an example of an extreme case that we all know that are fetched would be to bring a team in to get them up and running and then leave. But that's essentially what startups are doing when they say, let's outsource this whole sales prospecting function, because there are people who have better habit of getting the first appointments for us, and we'll just close. We'll just be closers. And I just shake my head when I hear that. And I try to convince them that, you know what, let's get internally our messaging down so that we can give these outsourcers a playbook to follow step by step, like you were talking about at the initial part of our call, about understanding the process and getting a process that's rinse and repeat. When you got it to that point, then by all means, bring in more outsourced bodies to help execute that process. But to define the process and to create the process so that you have the ability to rinse and repeat, that should be done internally, in my opinion.
I don't disagree with that at all. I don't disagree at all.
Yeah. Crazy. I mean, I've worked with so many outsourcers, and it's seems to be the same in a lot of cases, is that the leads that come through remind me of marketing qualified leads. You get the minnows, you get the whales, you get the sharks. You're casting this wide net, rates suffer, and the revenue suffers, and the forecast is all off, because you haven't taken the time to work through the core principle of why people should change, why now, and why you. And it's just universal. That's, we got to solve that problem internally as a company.
I think you and I should
why
co-author,
we matter.
Should co-author my next book. We're on the same page with this. we can start a movement.
Always on my soapbox. And in fact, I'm teaching a class today on prospect persona development. And the UVP, you know, the unique value proposition, is a huge part of that. We can't start conversations if we don't start them properly. And I love your framework. Say that framework one more time for everybody.
The addiction model framework.
Start with the pain.
Yeah, the addiction model framework is find pain, build value, create urgency, discuss solution. It's a four-step process. And you have to go in that order, and you can't skip around. You've got to get somebody to admit that they have a problem, and you have to educate them and help them understand why this problem matters. And you have to get them to understand that it's important to solve this problem as fast as possible. And then and only then are they going to be open to hearing about the solution. You can't just walk up to an addict and say, hey, Mary Lou, I think you have a problem, and I've got this amazing rehab facility called Passages down in Malibu, and I think you should go. It doesn't work like that. The person's going to look at you like you're absolutely crazy and say, I don't have a problem, and blah, blah, blah. So find pain, get them to admit that they have a problem there, right? So it's pain, value, urgency, solution. Those four steps in that order.
In that order, and learn how to create and practice those questions so that the prospect or whoever you're speaking with will admit to and recognize and become aware of acutely their pain.
Right.
As opposed to you telling them what their pain is.
Yeah, it's very different. You telling somebody as opposed to them admitting it.
Exactly. So Scott, how do we get a hold of you? And if we wanted to download the framework or get some more information on the framework, what's the best way for us to do that?
The best way to read about the framework is to get on Amazon and check out my book. It's called Addicted to the Process. It's on Amazon, okay. Kindle, and paperback. You can get a hold of me via LinkedIn. I have a really active presence on LinkedIn. I'm maxed out on connections, so if you try to add me, I won't be able to connect with you. But you can click the follow button and send me LinkedIn sort of emails over there. I'm really responsive to that stuff. So. Would love to help anybody out and talk to anybody who needs some advice.
And for those of you who are thinking Costa Rica or some exotic vacation / working session, we'll definitely put your information out there for that. I think that's a great way to learn.
Check out the website. It's called surfandsales.com.
Surfandsales.com. And I'll put all this in your show notes on your page so people who are listening can just go to that page, get all this and links for Scott. It's incredible being maxed out on LinkedIn is quite an incredible feat in itself. So congratulations on that.
Thanks.
And we will be in touch. So I want the audience to know that this is a framework that definitely will get you more first meetings, more follow-up meetings, will advance the sale, will get you more qualified prospects that will close at a higher rate. It all starts with that initial conversation and how that's framed out. A great framework that's been proven. He has been working how long now in this environment now? You said 20 years plus?
About 15 years now. Not quite 20. Don't
eat. Lots of accounts. Yeah, well, see, I'm just assuming everybody's as old as I am, which is not necessarily the case. But he definitely is a person to contact if you really want to hone your message and hone the reasons why people should continue that conversation with you. Scott, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. Sorry about the crazy connection today here in San Diego.
It's fine. Enjoy San Diego. I had a good time talking to you.